This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The television version of this show airs on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. A new report on fracking is just the latest in a mounting pile of documentation that points to the dangers of the industry. Fracking, or hydraulic fracturing, as a means to extract oil and gas, has boomed in recent years in the U.S. The rise in fracking operations have drawn broad condemnation from communities whose land, air, and water are impacted by fracking operations. But what about the most vulnerable among us who don't always have a voice? Well, the new report, Dangerous and Close, finds that there are far too many child care centers, schools, hospitals, and nursing homes that lie within a one-mile radius of fracking operations. My guest is Elizabeth Ridlington. She is a policy analyst with the Frontier Group, and she is the author of the report, Dangerous and Close. Welcome to the program, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So what you basically looked at was how close these centers that house basically the young, the elderly, the hospitalized, how close they are to fracking operations. Can you explain the methodology of the report? Where did you look? How close did a center have to be sort of considered within a danger zone of a fracking operation?
Sure. So we obtained information about the location of 160,000 fracked oil and gas wells in 9 states. Most of that data came from the oil and gas industry. Some came from state regulators. And then we mapped the location of all those facilities. And then we also mapped the location of daycares, schools, nursing homes, and hospitals. And that enabled us to see that there are nearly 2,000 daycare centers and nearly 1,400 K-12 public and private schools that are within 1 mile of a fracked well. And those nearly 1,400 K-12 schools serve 650,000 children. So there are 650,000 K-12 students in this country who go to school every day within a mile of a fracked oil or gas well. We also found that there are more than 200 nursing homes and more than 100 hospitals that are within a mile of a fracked well. We know that fracking creates extensive air pollution, potentially water pollution, that there's also the risk of well blowouts and fires and other problems. And it's clear that the closer you are to a fracked well, the higher your risk of a variety of health problems.
Right. So let's talk about that. You know, those who defend fracking operations would say these are safe. As long as safety regulations are met, it shouldn't be a problem for your child to be in a child care center or go to a school that is within a mile of a fracking operation. So why is it a problem for these to be so close by?
It's a problem for a number of reasons. The main issue, though, is that fracking is an industrial activity, and it doesn't belong so close to the facilities that serve our most vulnerable people in society. So a typical fracked well requires 1,000 truck trips to bring in water, chemicals, sand, and other heavy equipment. The heavy equipment on that site is run usually with diesel fuel or else with natural gas, and that creates extensive air pollution for the people nearby. We also know that there's the potential for water pollution, as I had mentioned before. These are industrial sites. The kinds of air pollution that then come from these fracking operations have an impact on all of us, but children and the elderly and the sick are especially vulnerable.
And so, do you think that there are these sorts of institutions and centers far closer to fracking operations than there would be to other kinds of industrial things? I mean, I'm just wondering if fracking, because it's such a growing and still sort of relatively new-ish industry, is being given a pass in terms of proximity to children and daycare centers and schools, et cetera.
Yes, I think that's right. When we mapped the location of those 160,000 wells in 9 states, we also mapped the location of the shale formations deep underground that they were targeting. And the wells follow the pattern of the shale formations. They don't tend to make many exceptions for where there are populations and big communities. So it seems that in most cases, we would be going out of our way to protect vulnerable people from dangerous activities, and we're not doing that in the case with oil and gas fracking.
So the report looked specifically at 9 of the most heavily drilled states. I mean, obviously, this is a nationwide activity, but it is clustered. The shale wells are clustered, and therefore, of course, the fracking operations are clustered in certain states. Texas and California, the two biggest states in the nation, are among these states as well. Tell us a little, which is the worst state that you found in terms of the most vulnerable, the greatest number of vulnerable people living within close proximity to fracking operations?
Sure, I'd say Texas is probably the state with the most problems in this regard. So in Texas, 9% of daycare facilities, 9% of K-12 schools are within 1 mile of a fracked well. 10% of nursing homes and 8% of hospitals are also within 1 mile of a fracked well. In Texas, there are about 430,000 students who attend school within a mile of a fracked well. That's roughly 2/3 of all the students affected in the country. In the 9 states that we looked at are located in Texas. At least in a state like Pennsylvania, where you look at where the fracked wells are located, there's a big donut hole that on the map around Pittsburgh, because there's not fracking in Pittsburgh. Texas doesn't seem to have taken even that level of basic precaution, and there's lots of fracking that happens in heavily populated areas. And so that's why the numbers are so very high for Texas.
What can you tell us about California, where this program is produced?
So in California, there's also extensive fracking, but because the state is such a large state, the percentage of affected students and daycare facilities is much lower. In some ways, though, that doesn't matter, because if your child is the child attending a school that's a half mile or a mile or 2 miles from a fracked well site, and you can smell the pollution coming off of that, and so the teachers keep the kids indoors, it doesn't matter that it's a small percentage of the schools in California that are affected. It's way too many, given that if there's still even one school that's affected.
Right. You mentioned that the industrial activities, such as the trucking of chemicals and water, et cetera, simply creates more pollution in the air. What about water pollution? How are these vulnerable communities impacted by water pollution that is linked to fracking? And what are some of the other, and of course, these fracking operations don't always abide by their own safety regulations, and I'm sure that our federal agencies don't hold them to account.
So on the water pollution problem, many of these daycares and schools and other facilities are in relatively rural areas. That means that they're on well water, not some citywide utility-provided water. So they are vulnerable to the water pollution that might occur from surface-level spills that trickle down into the aquifer, from failures of the well bore itself, where potentially some chemicals could come out of the fracked well into the drinking water supply. So that's one of the hazards of drinking water pollution for these vulnerable people living close to wells in rural areas. We sadly don't know very much about how well fracking operations comply with the law and where violations are occurring. We have a little bit of data from Pennsylvania from a past analysis that we did that shows that violations are happening, and they do happen close to schools and other vulnerable populations. But so far anyway, the crackdown and improved regulatory oversight just isn't happening yet.
And what about air pollution directly from the fracking operations, not just from the extra vehicles and traffic activity? Is there airborne pollution? You mentioned the children who would be impacted by smells in the air near a fracking site.
Yeah, so one of the common pollutants near fracking sites is benzene. For children, that's a problem because it damages long-term respiratory health. For workers, benzene is a potential carcinogen, but for children, because they're younger and they're still growing and developing, the impact seems a little bit different and it damages their respiratory health. We also know that for older adults over 60 who are regularly exposed to air polluted with benzene, their bodies and their immune systems are just older and can't break down that toxin as well. So for some reason, that exposure to inhaled benzene raises insulin resistance in these older adults and increases their risk of becoming diabetic.
Is there also, of course, an increased risk of other specific ailments like cancer, like asthma?
So we know that in the long run, exposure to air pollution stunts children's lungs. So they don't grow to be the same size as they would otherwise have been. So as adults, they won't be able to breathe as much air. And then in the short run, though, the air pollution that occurs from fracking sites can trigger asthma attacks, and there's good data from Pennsylvania showing that people who live close to fracking sites are more likely to be hospitalized, seek a doctor's care, or other medical treatment for asthma, and that's very dependent upon how close they live to a fracking site.
And is that something that you find corroborated in other reports on fracking? This is, as I said, you know, still a newish industry, and so many, there are reports being done. Do you find reports of strong correlations between these specific health ailments and people who live or work close to fracking sites that you can then extrapolate and say these nursing homes, hospitals, schools within 1 mile radius are likely to experience similar kinds of health problems?
There is not really good data on the health impacts of fracking. Mm-hmm. We have a handful of good studies, the one I mentioned in Pennsylvania, there's been some work done in Colorado, about the health impacts of fracking for people who live nearby. But because, as you mentioned, fracking is a relatively new thing, because there are significant loopholes in what industry has to report, there's not been great data collection about either the kind of pollution coming out of fracking sites or about the short-term or long-term health impacts for people who spend hours and hours nearby.
What are the policy recommendations that you make from this report and from what you have found? I mean, this is a state-by-state issue. You looked at 9 of the most heavily drilled states, but it seems like such a huge problem. There's a lot of money and even ideological sort of investment in fracking as an industry. So getting change to happen is very difficult, as you know, activists have found, like people who live in Denton, Texas have found. So what do you recommend needs to be done?
Our long-term vision is that this country needs to ban fracking. It's an unsafe practice for healthy adults, but it's especially an unsafe practice for vulnerable populations. Barring that, an interim step would be to end fracking that occurs close to those vulnerable populations and to close existing wells close to schools and daycares, hospitals and nursing homes. I think that the fundamental underlying problem here, though, is that we are so dependent on fossil fuels, on oil and natural gas, that we are willing to sacrifice the health of our children and other vulnerable people in society. Really, what we need to be doing is looking to make a wholesale shift as quickly as possible to greater energy efficiency and greater renewable energy. And that may come at some cost, but I think that you know, the cost that we're paying right now is the health of young people and the health of our most vulnerable people.
And I'm so glad you brought up this issue of the broad long-term issue of long-term dependence on fossil fuels, because one of the reasons why fracking has been championed by politicians is because it, you know, quote, reduces our dependence on foreign oil. And we've even seen that play out in the political arena most recently. You know, the U.S. is able to not have such a close relationship with a country like Saudi Arabia, because now we just don't need as much of their oil as we used to in the past, because we have so much oil from fracking. The oil and gas from fracking has also pushed down prices, which has, of course, kept consumers happy. But it doesn't seem as though our politicians are taking the long view, which is we just can't sustain the continual burning of fossil fuels from a climate change perspective, and then the short and long-term health perspective of our own citizens, because now we're bringing that oil production home instead of in these faraway countries, is also this huge impact. It's just, why is it not talked about enough among our politicians, Elizabeth?
That is a hard one to answer. It's because it's a difficult conversation. It's laying out in very stark terms that we have a decision to make now about perhaps paying a little bit more for oil and gas now, or in the long term, paying for it in terms of ill health in our children, and also a dramatically changing climate that's not going to be safe for any of us at times. So I think it's a very hard conversation to have, and that's why somebody running for elected office doesn't particularly want to bring up these issues.
And yet, of course, there has been a huge outcry, as I mentioned earlier, from communities who do get impacted directly by fracking. I mean, there's been, and this is not just a U.S. thing, communities all over the world that are experiencing this boom in fracking are speaking out. Many have called for a ban on fracking, and there's been some state-by-state and even local victories, but isn't there this sort of widespread popular disgust with fracking for those people who sort of see it and feel it themselves?
Yes, there have been some very strong local movements, both here in the US and internationally, against fracking. So you mentioned Denton, Texas earlier, that managed to pass a ban that would create a buffer zone, I think, around some houses and other facilities, but that was defeated by the Texas legislature. So while it has sparked intense local opposition, that local opposition hasn't been able to get organized enough to win some state level or much less a national victory to begin to curb the impacts of fracking and the practice.
And of course, some of the WikiLeaks revelations that came out about Hillary Clinton recently revealed her personal opinion on fracking. She's a supporter of fracking, likely our next president, and her message to activists opposing fracking was they should, quote, get a life. Well, finally, Elizabeth, where can people get a hold of this report, Dangerous and Close, that you and others have published? It's been put together by three different organizations, right?
Yes, it's been put together by Frontier Group, so it's available at our website, frontiergroup.org. It's also available from Environment America at environmentamerica.org. And then also we had help from the Frack Tracker Alliance, which kindly has put all of the maps online in an interactive format. So if you go to fracktrackeralliance.org, it's possible, or actually fracktracker.org, it's possible to look at the maps state by state.
And we'll also post a direct link to the report that people can download from our website, risingupwithsonali.com, later today. Elizabeth, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Ridlington is a policy analyst with the Frontier Group. She's one of the authors of the report that we've been discussing called Dangerous and Close: Fracking Puts the Nation's Most Vulnerable People at Risk. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/ruwithsonali.